I want to read a little from the book of Deuteronomy, and in chapter 15. Deuteronomy chapter 15. And we will commence to read at verse 12. And if thy brother, an Hebrew man or an Hebrew woman, be sold unto thee and serve thee 6 years, then in the 7th year thou shalt let him go free from thee. Verse 16. And it shall be, if he say unto thee, I will not go away from thee, because he loveth thee and thine house, because he is well with thee, then thou shalt take an awl and thrust it through his ear unto the door, and he shall be thy servant forever, and also unto thy maidservant thou shalt do likewise. Generally, when ministry is given regarding the Hebrew servant from the Exodus passage, the ministry is related to the person of the Lord Jesus, and I would think rightly so. But speaking for a few minutes this afternoon about the Hebrew servant from this Deuteronomy passage, I want to relate the ministry to the average believer, to yourself and to myself. And I want us to notice that there is a message in this passage for both man and woman. God has distinctly stated a Hebrew man or an Hebrew woman. But whether I can give you the message as it should be given or not is another matter. But there is a message here for every sister in this company, and a message for every brother as well. Now I want to put my simple message under three headings. I heard a wise preacher say some time ago that it was a good thing to tell your audience what you were going to speak about, so that when you had finished, they would know. I want to speak about the Hebrew servant in this way. First of all, his coming to the master. Secondly, his accompanying with the master. And thirdly, his choice for the master. His coming, his accompanying, and his joy. Now, as far as his coming to the master would be concerned, I would think it would be an experience about which he would be very clear. I don't think he would be hazy or uncertain about it. I believe he would be quite clear as to the time and the circumstances under which he came. And I would hope that everybody in this meeting would be equally clear about their coming to Christ, the new master. It's not something that you can afford to be careless or hazy about eternal issues are at stake. I hope we are all clear about our coming to Christ. But there's another side to it. We're told that the Master bought him. And when in his need and distress he came to the Master, he was bought. Now we are not told what price was paid. May have been 20 pieces, may have been 30. We don't know. But we do know that the Master bought him. And I would take it that the Master had at least two things in mind when he bought him. First of all, to relieve him, to deliver him from his distress, to meet his need. No doubt the Master did that. But I take it he had a second idea in mind. It was this. There's an individual, and they could be useful to me. They could serve me. I could entrust my matters to them. He has an interest in the welfare, admittedly, but he has an interest in the fact that this one could be useful. Now, I can't stay with that just now, save to say this. I would take it that every one of us saved in this meeting deeply appreciate the fact that we came to Christ and we were delivered from our condition of need and distress and danger, and likely we thank him for it every day we live. But I wonder, do we give the second idea as much consideration? Do we? This servant would. I have been purchased. My Master did that in order that I might serve him. Now I say we don't know what he paid, but you and I know the price that was paid to make us his own. And I can't help but feel that the elders from Ephesus, when they met Paul at Miletus, must have stood back almost in amazement when Paul charged them to take care of that church. And amongst other things, he said, he purchased it with the blood of his own. They were precious. And says Peter, we are not redeemed with corruptible things, such as silver or gold. The dear brother said to me not long ago, when I was going out to a ministry meeting one afternoon, should he try and help God's people if you can, for they cost him a lot. He was bought. A price was paid. You and I have been bought. And think of the price as I quickly leave that. Says the apostle to the Corinthians, you're not your own. You're bought with a price. I want you to notice, secondly, his company with the Master. At least 6 years. And one thing at least we would learn would be this, that in those 6 years, he would get to know his Master. He couldn't live in his home and engage in his affairs without day by day becoming increasingly familiar with his master, he would get to know him. Jeremiah has this to say in chapter 9. He says, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches. But let him glory in this, that he knoweth me. A knowledge of God. I wasn't long saved until I went at a conference to a place called Bleary. Mr. Hawthorne Bailey, one of our esteemed evangelists, gave us an address on the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. And in the midst of that address, he made a statement that shook me to my center and has done the same many a time since. Emphasizing the fact that the Lord Jesus was living, said he, I know he's living, for I was talking to him this morning. Come now, brethren, what about it? Wasn't God's complaint in the day of Hosea, no knowledge of God in the land? My people are destroyed by a lack of knowledge. Oh, they may have had many things that they understood in material and earthly matters, but it's the knowledge of God that's a complaint. And I can't help but feel there must have been a good deal of feeling and pathos in the heart and voice of David. He addressed his son Solomon, perhaps about 19 years of age. He said, Solomon, know thou the God of thy father. You get to know God, Solomon. And doesn't Paul emphasize the same to the Colossians? He said, increasing in the knowledge of God. And what is Daniel to say about it? Just this. He says, they that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. I don't know how you feel. I read in the Acts of the Apostles and I be stirred as I see the exploits. Prayed, the place was shaken. When the preached men's hearts were bowed, they cried, what will we do? I read missionary books and others, saw the exploit. Brethren, where are these to be seen today? I wonder kindly, would the answer be here? They that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. We could see that he would get to know his master's presence. When the master would be in the house, he would feel it. When the master would be out of the house, he would feel it. He would get to know his master's presence. And isn't it nice, in some little measure, to feel the presence of the Lord in one's private life? And isn't it lovely to go into home and you feel the presence of God in the home? And isn't it lovely in meetings such as these, when something creeps into the meeting, you couldn't explain it, you couldn't produce it, but the sense of the presence of God. The servant would get to know his master's presence. Secondly, he would get to know his master's purpose. Had you said to the servant, "What would your master like you to do?" Well, I'm really not very sure. I'm just moving around here. "What would your master like to be done about this place?" "Well, you know, just take things as they come." "Think so?" "I don't." He would have said immediately, "I know what my master wants me to do. And I know what my master wants done in this place." You know, I thought I saw this illustrated beautifully in two characters, one of the old and the other of the new. I see that unnamed servant in Genesis 24. And he's going. "And where are you going?" "Well, I'm going for a trip to Mesopotamia. See how things work out." "Are you? Did you say that?" "No." "Where are you going?" "My master's purpose is a bride for my son, for his son. And that's all that concerns me at the moment." I thought I saw it in that noble New Testament servant. "Where are you going, Paul?" "Well, I'm going on a wee preaching trip." "Any particular before you?" "No, not really. Just see how it works out." "Did you say that?" "No, sir." "Where are you going, Paul?" "I'm going for my master's purpose is to take out of the nations a people for his name and to build testimonies to his truth. And that's what I'm after." He knew his master's purpose. Tell me, young Christian, in the meeting this afternoon, and I put it to you kindly, you got some idea what the master's purpose in your life is? Have you got some idea as to what the master's purpose is in connection with your service? Too bad, isn't it, just to aimlessly wander about and go through the precious days and years of life. And mind you, let me tell you, they'll slip away far more quickly than you think. And would it be too bad to look back? I frittered them away. He would have known his master's purpose more than that. He would have known his master's possessions. He said to the servant, "What has your master in the house?" And he could have rattled them off immediately. "How do you know that?" "Because I company with them, and I live in the home with them, and I have learned what he has in the home." I saw that in these two men that I've mentioned. You see that unnamed servant when he comes to Rebecca. What does he do? He brings out his master's possessions, and he displays them in such a way that not only is the young woman interested and attractive, but she says, "I'll go." I thought I saw the same in Paul. "Oh, when you go to preach, what are you going to preach?" "I'm going to preach the unsearchable riches of Christ." That's not a great thing for a man to set out to do. "And Paul, how do you know the riches of Christ? Didn't you say on the Damascus Road, 'Who art thou?'" "I did, but I've lived with him now for a long time. And I put it to you quickly. When I started to preach at first, the clock was a plague to me, for I thought I'd never get the time in. And now it's a plague the other way. You hardly think you'll get what you want to say in, but I'll try and keep time all the same. Mr. Jones did that, and I'll try and do the same." Tell me, young Christian, If you were in touch with some of your college friends, you ladies, if you were in touch with some of your neighbors, you brethren, if you were in touch with some of the men you work with, tell me, could you present the possessions of your master in such a way as to interest them, to attract them, to win them? Could you speak of his eternal glories? Could you speak of his virgin birth? Could you speak of his sinless life, his atoning death, his resurrection, his intercession, and his coming? These are things belonging to your master and mine. What would be an awful business if we didn't know them? Because none of us know them the way we'd like to. It's well to try and get to know them, isn't it? He would know his master's possession. Well, I'll have to leave that. His coming to the master, his accompanying with the master. Now see his choice for the master. And mind you, he had a choice to make. As a gospel preacher all my life, I have believed that we should make the message of the gospel clear and plain that the individual sinner has a choice to make. But mind you, increasingly of late years, I have believed that we would need to emphasize to our own hearts as the people of God that we have a choice to make. And in a plain word, it's a choice between the things of this world and the things of God. That was emphasized in our reading this morning, wasn't it? Likely most of you reading men have books written by William Kelly. I hope you get more out of them than I do, for I find them hard to read. Though, mind you, some of our very well-taught brethren have told me that they got more help from them than from anybody else. Well, all right. William Kelly had a nephew who studied Greek at Trinity College in Dublin. The lecturer said to the nephew one day, "Have you help with your Greek studies?" "I have." "Who helps you?" "My Uncle William." "I'd like to meet him." And it was arranged. And after some conversation, the lecturer said to Mr. Kelly, "We could offer you an interesting post in this place." And the conversation flowed on, and Mr. Kelly paid no attention. The lecturer came back to it, and he said, "Mr. Kelly, you don't seem to be interested in what I've suggested." "No," said he, "I'm not interested in the slightest degree." "Well," said he, "I'm surprised at that. For," said he, "if you were interested and accepted, you could make a name for yourself in the world." And with calm dignity, the servant of God looked at him. Said he, "Tell me, sir, of which world do you speak?" "Young man, tell me this afternoon, did you ever think about that? Which world? Your gold will waste and wear away. Your honors perish in a day. This portion never can decay. Christ for me." He had a choice to make. It was optional. It was voluntary. It was sacrificial. He could say, "Now, I'll sacrifice the big wide world outside, and I'll stay with my master's interest. Or, I leave these my master's interests, and I'll enjoy what some might call liberty out in the big wide world outside." It was sacrificial. And likely most of you, like myself, have known dear brethren, and they've sacrificed time and promotion and position
And some of them did it because of devotion to the things of God. Likely many a sister has done the same. But he makes his choice. And I want you to notice just quickly before I finish that there were three things that influenced him in the choice he made. He made his choice. And the first thing that impressed him, I believe, was just this. An appreciation of his master's provision. He said, it's well with me. It wasn't always like that. Oh, he remembered days of distress and difficulty. But now it's all changed. And who does he owe it to? He owes it to his new master. He said, I appreciate my master's provision. And couldn't each of us today in this meeting say from our hearts, it's well with us, physically, materially, and with H.G. Spafford we could say, it is well with my soul. And I've been stirred since I came to the country about 3 weeks ago in these big cities to see the teeming masses of humanity. And the most of them in the darkness of their sins going down to despair. And here we are, saved by grace and brought amongst God's people, sitting blessed abundantly. It's well with us, isn't it? He appreciated his master's provision. Secondly, he had an attachment to his master's place. He says, I love this house. He'd been in other houses, but he'd never been in one like this before. Pious Israelite. And he says, I wouldn't leave this house, no, not for the world. It's my master's house. I love this house. You wouldn't be long thinking about that until you think of David's words. He said, I have loved the habitation of thy house. I couldn't tell you what house David talked about in that 26th Psalm. Some house of curtains, likely. But I was trying to tell you yesterday afternoon what I believe is the house of God today. It's nothing other than the assembly. And my, it's nice to have an appreciation of the master's provision. And isn't it great to have an attachment to the master's place? And mind you, when he speaks about this place, I don't think you could find him for a single moment saying to some of the servants, you know what we'll do? We'll bring in a whole lot of things different. Oh, no, 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 no. That would grieve the master. It's not our house to do what we like. It's the master's house. And you couldn't see him talking to some of the servants and saying, do you know what I think we'll do? We'll go down the street and we'll divide and start another wee house of our own. Oh, don't think you could see him do that either. It's his master's house. He says, I'm going to stay with him. But then as I close, he had an attachment to his master's place, but he had an affection for his master's person. Listen to him. He said, I love my master. And could you blame him? I couldn't. See what the master did for him. See the years that he accompanied with him. He says, I love my master. I was preaching in Glasgow some years ago. One morning I was sitting in the room reading the Bible, and perhaps the oldest overseer from the assembly came in to see me. And he gently closed the door behind him. And he broke out in tears. And I was disturbed. I really wondered what was wrong. Said I, Mr. Johnson, what's your difficulty? He was getting old, maybe just a little weak. Said, hey, Brother Jim, I'm beginning to think that I mightn't be saved at all. And I wondered, whatever will I do? And suddenly it occurred to me, I'll read him from 1 Peter. Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious. I said, Mr. Johnson, do you love the Lord Jesus? And he broke out in a flood of tears. Said he, I love him with all my heart. Ah, that's it. My, if we brethren could get there, and sisters too, would it solve many a difficulty and a problem.